That's so dumb.
Axel slurs before staggering inside the villa. New low unlocked. I shift my weight back to my palms. Just got called dumb by Axel Hockey Dude. Connor's mouth twitches.
Must cut deep.
My self-esteem is bleeding on the floor. In the dark, my phone lights up with a text from Scarlett. My heart quickens, but I don't look at it. All that matters right now is that Connor will. And Connor does. Even shrouded in shadows as he is, I see his features become taut. I take a shallow breath, feel the distant hum of the waves lapping at Isola Bella, wait for him to speak. Am rewarded soon enough.
You can't be serious, Maya.
His R's roll more than ever. I blink innocently. What do you mean? He pointedly glances at my phone. The notification, Hans, one message, lingers. I'm being devious. I'm being unfair and problematic and manipulative. I should tell him the truth. I want him. I miss him. I wish for us to be honest with each other. But honesty will only send him retreating. You told Avery that you're in love with someone else, and we both know who you were talking about is not a conversation he's ready to have. Just texting a friend, I explain, truthful.
We've been over this.
And I told you what was going to get me to stop. An exhale.
Are you planning to meet up with them?
I say nothing. A muscle jumps in his jaw.
Tell me you're not planning to leave this house.
I cock my head, choose my words very carefully. If you sit here with me and answer a single question, maybe I won't. It's almost too easy. For me, that is. Connor's nostrils flare, his cheekbones tense, and... nope, not easy for him. Although I give him credit for settling close enough to me that the denim of his jeans brushes against my bare thigh.
What question?
He asks roughly. Why did we never meet in person in the past 3 years? His tone lives somewhere between impatient and confused.
We met plenty of times, whenever I went over to Eli's house.
Alone, Connor. Why did we never make plans to meet alone?
Because you were finishing up your graduate degree, and I run one of the fastest-growing biotech firms in the country. We didn't have time.
We talked on the phone nearly every day, and they weren't short calls. Seems to me like we both made time. The tendons in his neck flex. Oh, Connor, I think. I never said I would play nice. And to prove it, I glance at my phone. Let my eyes linger on it.
Fucking hell.
He mutters, but he looks me in the eye and says, with a calm he doesn't feel,
It's just the rhythm our friendship fell into, Maya. Different relationships have different needs.
I agree.
Good. Then we can go the fuck to sleep.
The last part, I mean. No two relationships are alike. But the bit before, about it being a natural evolution, do you want to know what I think?
Not particularly.
I don't hide my smile. I think that I took you by surprise back in Edinburgh. You enjoyed talking to me. You opened up. We got close in a way that you hadn't experienced before, and that made you uncomfortable.
Maya.
But you liked it, too. And that's why for the past 3 years, you never once declined a call from me. You always reached out if you didn't hear from me for a few days. We became really intimate, emotionally. So much so you couldn't risk that intimacy to become physical, too. I pause, give him a chance to object. Instead, he just observes me, granite hard. It made it easier, didn't it? The distance? The phone? Another wave rolls in. Tell me if I'm wrong.
You're wrong.
I lean closer. His eyes glint into mine, darker than the night around us. I refuse to let him look away. Tell me if I'm wrong, I repeat. He doesn't lie again. And all at once, for the first time in years, something gives. A turn of his head, a twitch in his mouth. He glances away, but when he faces me again, I can almost touch the change in him. His mouth parts, his body inches toward mine, the fabric of his clothes rough against my skin. The air surrounding us snaps, like a physical manifestation of the control he has held onto since Edinburgh. The beginning of fracture. Admit the truth. Admit it. A gust of breeze rises, whipping through his hair, then mine.
How do I make you shut up, Maya?
Just tell me that I'm wrong. Slowly, I smile. By my silence, Connor. Tell me that I got it wrong, and I'm never going to bring it up again. I'm going to text my new friend back and...
Go to your room.
I flinch back, swallow my disappointment, straighten my spine. You don't get to tell me what to...
Maya.
He half growls. The sound comes from deep in his chest.
Go to your fucking room right now.
And... Oh. Oh. That edge in his voice. I was wrong. He's not trying to send me to bed after all. Something is not quite as it was. I rise to my feet without asking him to explain himself. He and I no longer talk anyway. We're stuck in this complicated cycle of toxic silence and avoidance, and this is the closest I've felt to him in 10 months. There's no point in letting go now. I start down the stone path, not bothering to pick up my phone. It'll be here tomorrow, or it won't. It's hard to resist the urge to turn around and investigate Connor's eyes, make sure that he'll follow me inside. But one of us has to take the lead, and I can be Orpheus. I can keep going forward. I can listen for his steps as he comes after me. Chapter 27. He doesn't knock, and I don't expect him to. I'm leaning against the wall right in front of the door, waiting for him. I do briefly wonder whether I misunderstood, whether I'm crazy, whether he'll change his mind, but he appears and mirrors my pose, back against the door, restructuring the shape of the room with his presence. Hey, I say, soft, even though the house is asleep, or too inebriated to pay attention to us. My neighbors are Neota and Axel. The former is supportive of any interaction between Connor and me, and the latter... Axel is the kind of guy to give a universal thumbs up to whoever's about to get laid, be it person, anime character, or wild animal. Was it necessary, sending me up alone? I doubt Lucrezia patrols the hallways.
That's not why, Maya.
What then?
A chance for you to change your mind. Clear your head.
You're assuming that I can't think clearly when you're around.
I can't think clearly when you're around.
He breaks eye contact.
You're way too fucking young to...
To consort with boys, to have sexual desires, to choose who to satisfy them with. A still moment. Connor? His frown is displeased. Can I tell you a secret? He nods once. You are so fucking boring. The line of his jaw softens. His exhaled huff could be laughter, too.
Thank you, trouble.
He pushes away from the door, crossing the room to me. In the soft, warm light of the floor lamp, his hair is pitch black. Without the speckles of gray and fine lines around his eyes, this Connor could easily be a boy, 10 years younger than I know him to be. And he would still bitch about being too old for me.
Do you do it on purpose?
He asks, standing squarely before me. We haven't been this close since Edinburgh. I've taken off my t-shirt, and his head dips to look down at me, fingertips tracing the top elastic of my bikini bottoms, stopping right above my belly button. Suddenly, violently, I am lightheaded. What?
The stuff you wear. You do it to drive me out of my mind, don't you?
I glance at myself. I didn't have a chance to go shopping before this trip, or I'd have bought the flossiest piece of nylon spandex blend on the discount rack just to annoy the shit out of him. But the bikinis I already owned are style over skimpiness. Retro. Vintage high waist. Lots of polka dots. Jade calls them my hipster librarian swimsuits. You don't even know how grateful you should be, Connor.
Is that so?
It's not revealing at all.
It's not about revealing, Maya.
His fingers dip down past the waist of my bottoms, and my breath catches.
It's the way you take over the space around you. You remind me constantly, loudly, indecently, of all the little things that make you, you. It's impossible to escape, and it makes me very angry.
His hand inches down, and I bite my lower lip. I'm sorry for being myself.
You should be,
he says, but the last syllable becomes something groaned and choked and dragged out, and he's touching me right between my legs. I'm wet because of him. It's not new, but maybe he didn't know. And when the tips of his fingers first brush against me, his eyes flutter closed.
Fuck me, Maya.
He seems to sink back into himself for a heartbeat. All his muscles clench, as though knowing that I'm this ready triggered an earthquake inside him. That's what happens every time I see you, I say. My hand finds his thigh. I hope you think about it from now on. Every single time we are together. He's hard. I can feel the heat of his erection between us. My palms travel upward to cup him, and I wish I could say that it surprises me, the way he grips my wrist and traps it against the wall, but just like everything else, this has to be on his terms. He doesn't want to be in control of me, I don't think, just of himself. For that, however, he has to minimize environmental interference, keep the variables constant. I grin, feeling troublesome. Like I said, boring.
Can you be good? Just for once?
I'll think about it. My free arm reaches up, locks around his neck as I pull him down to me. What's it like? I ask against his ear, inhaling sharply when his fingers slide between the slick lips of my cunt. Connor smells like a night out. Faint traces of cigarette smoke and brine and sweat, but underneath it all, it's just him. I want to lick the skin of his collarbone. So I do. To be this boring.
You may think I'm boring,
he murmurs against my ear.
But I've been fucking superhuman for so long when it comes to you, since Edinburgh.
The tip of his middle finger sinks inside me, just one digit, and my nails dig into his nape, feeling the thrum of his blood underneath. There's his thumb, too. Lazy circles around my clit. Glorious. Perfect pressure. Delicious friction. He listens to every sound I make, pays attention to the way I move against him, and what turns me on the most, even now, is the moan that feels dragged out of him. The fast, shallow rhythm of his breath that tells me he's as into this as I am. And after that, I ask him. He closes his eyes, slides deeper. I consider myself lucky. I'm easy, responsive. I've always been quick at finding my pleasure, alone and with partners. This, though, is different. It's not just my body. Connor is in my brain, pushing into my soul. What about in Austin, Connor? The pad of his finger strokes the right spot. My body contracts against him in surprise.
Fuck, You. Unbelievable.
His teeth open at the base of my throat. He lets go of my wrist and his hand finds my hip, twitching, tightening around it. Do you remember that night? A little over a year ago? Heat rises within me, between us. My words are breathy, choppy, damp against the fabric of his shirt. You needed to talk to my brother, but he was gone, and I open the door, and his silent yes vibrates through me.
You had been asleep,
he says through clenched teeth. I wrap both arms around his neck, press my breasts against his chest, and he swears under his breath. Remember what I was wearing? A low groan. He does remember. It was very little, after all. You turned around and left, like you were in pain. I press a lingering kiss against his Adam's apple, run a finger through his hair to pull him toward me, arching to meet his lips. He draws back, a warning growl deep in his throat. This man, who's been fingering moans out of me for the past 5 minutes, refuses to kiss me. Connor and his fucking control. Really? I stutter. Are you really going to do this to yourself? His thumb slides on my clit, rougher. My hips jerk toward him. Come on, Connor. I try to laugh, but there's not enough air in my lungs. You want to kiss me so bad? Oh! I come suddenly, painfully, straining against him, shuddering like I cannot contain the pleasure within my body, and it feels so much better than the best orgasm of my life, the one I had on his thigh in Edinburgh. It's a tide sweeping over me, a glow of heat from within that has no right or reason to be this damn good, except for one. Connor watching me. Connor touching me. Connor talking me through it.
It's okay,
he says, when I slump in his arms, mouth silk soft against my temple.
It's okay, Maya.
He's hard against my flank. I may be wobblier than jelly and out of breath, but there's nothing that I would love more than to make him come too. You're gonna do that again, aren't you?
I don't know what you're referring to,
he says, pressing a kiss against my cheekbone, like the fucking liar he is. I fist his shirt with both hands. So if I offer to return the favor with a handjob or a blowjob, if I tell you that you can fuck my tits or literally any other part of my... He groans.
You can't, huh?
What?
Be good. Not even once.
I laugh, but no sound comes out. He's quiet, too, as he picks me up like I'm a cotton-stuffed plushie. I follow his lead, wrap my legs around his waist, and he carries me to the bed like the exhausted girl that I am, pulling back the cool sheets, depositing me between them. I stare at him from the too-thick pillow, yawn, and say, Connor Harkness, you are a coward. The twitch of his lips feels like agreement.
Go to sleep.
You'd love it, wouldn't you? It would make me shut up.
Such a fucking menace,
he mutters. His hands tremble as he pushes a few strands behind my ear. There is a cautious, fragile glint in his eyes, as though he's shaken, tender, and achy from what just happened, but in a way that has nothing to do with his body. I think I get it. He thought he'd come up here and play me like an instrument, handle me like a business deal. Maybe he hoped that there would be something clinical about this. He underestimated me. No, Connor has always recognized me for who I am. What he underestimated is us. I wish you good luck, I inform him.
On what?
On your righteous journey of self-denial.
You're going to...
Another yawn. Need it. He shakes his head, takes my phone out of his pocket and plugs it into the charger.
Go to sleep, Maya,
he repeats. I bury my face in the pillow, waiting for him to walk away, but I'm out like a light before he even leaves the room. 3 days before the wedding. Chapter 28. The following morning, I wake up late, and only because Nyota is threatening to slap someone with a lawsuit right under my window. I put on a pair of shorts, the tri-legged top she gave me, and dash downstairs, only to find her pacing in front of the cliffside's rail. Tisha, Rue, and Minami watch her from a stone bench, heads moving back and forth as if to follow a Wimbledon match. What happened? I ask, winded. White clouds cluster at the horizon, and the day is not as bright as the last few have been.
Well, several things. Ruse?
Minami's eyes narrow at me.
Is that a hickey, Maya?
My heart drops.
Where? On the right side of your throat?
I raise my hand instinctively to the spot Connor bit last night. Probably a mosquito bite?
Oh, yeah. I get allergic reactions all the time, too.
She scoots, making room for me to sit.
So, you know how this wedding might be cursed?
My stomach drops. Oh, no. What happened now?
They delivered the dress Rue's supposed to wear for the ceremony.
And? I love Rue's dress. It's simple and lithe, sexy, but with no frills, just like her. I've been looking forward to seeing her in it, and to watching my brother see her in it for the first time. That's why, when Tisha shows me the picture on her phone, I let out a terrified scream. It's not a yelp, it's not a gasp, it's a scream.
Kill it with fire! I plead, load it on a barge and cast it out to sea. Erase it from this metaphysical plane. What the hell is that?
The dress that was delivered. Why does it look like a tampon?
Oh, yeah, Tisha nods. We've been calling it the condom, but that fits way better. There was some kind of mix-up. This is someone else's dress.
Minami explains. I blink.
Are you implying that someone who is a human being who inhabits this here planet with us, was planning to get married in that?
Yep. All we know about that person is that she's about half a foot shorter than Rue. Wait, we know something else.
She has Rue's dress.
Can she ship it to us?
That will not be possible.
Can the store send us a replacement, then?
That is why Nyota is, threatening to tear their corporate structure to pieces, Minami says. The boutique has been refusing.
She just called the person on the line a herpetic little mouth sore. Maybe it's the pregnancy hormones, but it made me a bit horny. Why is the boutique refusing?
Well, it's not just them. It's actually more of a widespread problem.
Huh?
It's just not a good time to fly something to Eastern Sicily.
I used to not believe in curses, Rue says. She's at the other end of the bench and sounds a little shell-shocked, so I lean forward to look her in the face. I swore that marriage would not fundamentally change me as a person, but here I am. 3 days to the wedding, and reconsidering my stance on the supernatural.
Oh, Rue, the poisoning and the drowning, those were accidents, I smile, reassuring.
And the dress... If anyone can strong-arm someone into something, it's Nyota, which means that you'll have it in no time.
There is no curse. And if there ever was, it's losing steam. There were no near deaths in the past 36 hours. This is a robust upward trend, and... I stop talking because Tisha raised her arm and is pointing at something in the distance. I follow the trajectory, and that's when I see it. Oh, I say, finally realizing what is happening. My first impression was wrong. The day is not overcast. Not too far from us, a tall column of ashes and lava erupts from Mount Etna. According to a profoundly unconcerned Lucrezia, translated via my phone, we are not all going to die. The BBC, Al Jazeera, and a handful of social media apps all seem to agree. Or we definitely are, Tisha adds while we snack on tomato bruschetta. The olive oil here actually tastes like olives. It shouldn't feel remarkable, and yet... We're all dying. At some point. Unless biologists fix the whole telomeres situation, which doesn't seem likely at the moment. I've heard about this group in Finland that's doing amazing things when it comes to... Diego nudges her with a gentle kiss on the cheek.
Honey.
Right. Sorry. We are dying, but not in a pyroclastic blaze of pumice rain. What about the people closest to Mount Etna? Avery asks. They should be fine, as long as they don't venture to the mouth of the volcano to take selfies, I say. Mount Etna is one of the safest and best monitored volcanoes on Earth, and the lava moves slowly. The main issue is the air quality in Catania and the lack of visibility around the airport. All flights have been canceled.
So I can stop trying to pick my Pompeii pose,
Axel asks. Even his brother is confused.
You're what? You know, like those stone bodies from Mount Vesuvius's explosion.
I'm torn between being impressed by Axel's archaeological knowledge and wanting to find out which position he'd choose to be immortalized. Before I can foolishly ask questions I will regret, I decide to go back upstairs to brush my teeth. That's where I run into my brother. His curls are tousled, which is typical. What's unusual is the harried frown creasing his forehead. Are you okay?
Yeah,
he says, clearly meaning no. Where's Rue? He points at his room.
Napping.
Is she still entertaining the curse theory?
I convinced her that there's nothing to worry about.
I very much do not want to know what my brother did to relax his fiancée. Since we both know that there is, in fact, a lot to worry about. Is there anything you'd like me to do? He sighs.
My phone is blowing up with people who are supposed to fly in the next few days and aren't sure whether it'll be possible. And then there's the planner, and some of the caterers, and the music band was going to...
He massages the back of his head.
I need to get in touch with them.
So, you and Rue are taking care of it? He gives me an appalled look.
I would never ask Rue to talk on the phone with someone.
My brother would literally stand between his fiancé and a cannonball full of angry poisonous spiders. I love him. What I meant is there anything you'd like me to take care of?
No, I actually... Can you keep an eye on Tiny for the rest of the day? I'm gonna be too busy to walk him, and I'm not sure how the volcano will affect him. He snuck to you early, this morning, before the eruption started. Was he scared?
Not that I noticed.
Good.
His hand clasps my shoulder.
What a fucking mess.
A robotic pat to his arm. It'll be fine. I spend the following 20 minutes walking around the villa and its gardens, trying not to stare at the lava flowing down the side of Mount Etna. I walk past the olive and lemon groves. I slip inside the kitchen and am unceremoniously kicked out by Lucrezia. Lean too far off the guardrail and almost fall off the cliff. Bang together two sticks of yak cheese.
You okay?
Paul asks when I peek inside the room where he's working. Of course! So great! He squints at me like I'm a Magritte.
What are you looking for?
Nothing. Why do you think... Nothing.
You sure? You've popped by this room about 4 times, looking increasingly distressed, so...
Connor appears in the entrance. He's wearing a performance shirt and taped shorts, hair damp with sweat. Clearly back from a run. I'm so happy to see him, I could kiss him. Except that, no, I couldn't, because he's too chicken shit for that. Whatever. Least of my problems. I was just looking for this guy, I say, pointing at him. I need to chat with Connor about the, photo slideshow situation. Paul seems surprised.
Are Eli and Rue doing a slideshow?
They'd probably rather die. Yes, of course. And Connor and I are in charge of it, so can we talk about the logistics?
Yes,
his deep voice says.
I have time right now.
This ability of his to bullshit at the drop of a hat should definitely be categorized under red flags. But I can't say I mind. I'd feel so at home in a Swiss gift shop.
Should I ask you again if you are on drugs?
He says, once we're alone in the foyer. Honestly, I could really use a downer right now. He scowls.
What happened?
I need your help. Eli asked me to take care of Tiny today, but I can't do that.
Why?
I close my eyes. Because I have no idea where he is. Chapter 29.
You have to tell him,
Connor orders after 20 minutes of additional searching for a dog who weighs more than I do and has the coat of 1,000 alpacas. A dog who's so big and bad at hiding, he cannot be on the premises. Fuck!
He wandered off somewhere,
Connor continues. The heat today is thick and suffocating, painfully humid. We're in the lemon grove, and he's staring at me in that severe way of his, chin tilted in. I nearly shiver.
Maybe the eruption noises scared him. Let's ask Eli.
No.
He's not going to be angry at you, Maya. He's the one who let Tiny out of his room, assuming he'd come to yours and never made sure he got there.
When he sees me bite my lip, his gaze softens. He runs a hand over my curls, pushing them back from my forehead. Have I combed my hair today?
I'll take care of this. I don't want you to feel bad when it's Eli's fault.
Give me 1 more hour. Connor sighs, arm dropping back to his side.
For all we know, he's frolicking in highway traffic.
He wouldn't. Tiny is not stupid.
Tiny is a dog.
Like I said.
I've seen him chase his own tail, eat his own barf, and growl at his own reflection. All in a span of 10 minutes.
Okay, fine. His brain is pea-sized and we love him for it. But Rue has started to believe in curses, and she doesn't have a wedding dress. Connor's eyes flick down to my chest.
Maybe she can borrow your shirt.
Shit. I'm still wearing the tripod. And Eli's busy trying to save his wedding from a volcanic eruption. The whole thing is falling apart, so I'd rather exhaust all avenues before I tell them that their dog, whom they love more than they love me, is missing.
They don't love him more than...
It's fine. I love him more than them, too. Hey, maybe they can help. I point at the 3 bored-looking boys currently smoking cigarettes in the back of the villa, the grandsons, who must be on a break from being hounded by Lucrezia. They're always around. They may have seen him. Connor isn't optimistic, but he indulges me. Hi, I say when we approach them. The oldest, who must be around my age, glances at my legs and forgets to look away until Connor says something that has him muttering a low,
Scusa.
They chat in Italian for a bit. Connor asks about a cane who's molto grande. I'll never order another latte without hearing his voice. And all the boys shake their heads. But right as my heart sinks into my stomach, Leg Boy takes out his phone to make a call. He then relays it to Connor, pointing in the direction of the beach. What did he say?
His cousin works as a bagnino. On the public beach next to ours.
A what?
A lifeguard. He said that he saw a big mutt running on the shore a couple of hours ago.
Oh my God, really? Thank you! Thank you, thank you, thank you! Connor, ask him for his phone number. I'm going to send him all the pictures of my legs his little heart desires. Hey! I tug at my wrist, but Connor is already dragging me away. Hang on, we're going in the wrong direction. The beach is...
We can't just go to the beach and yell his name, Maya.
Why not?
Because it's miles long and we have no idea where or if Tiny stopped.
He's leading me toward something that looks like a shed, semi-hidden behind a few cypresses. His grip on my wrist slackens, and I must be having an interesting day because I let my hand slide down and close around his. He must be having an interesting day, too, because he allows it and twines his fingers with mine. My heart ricochets against my ribcage. What's the alternative? We still need to go to the beach. He opens the barn door. The inside is shaded, cool, scented with sawdust and oil. Is that a Vespa? I gasp.
Lambretta,
he corrects, easily mounting the motor scooter, which is painted the same blue as the sea.
Get on the back of the seat.
What?
There are tracks running parallel to the shore. This will be faster.
I want to ask if he's joking, but I know the answer. This is very like that Audrey Hepburn movie whose name I forgot, but...
Roman Holiday.
He shakes his head and mutters something about damn young people. Okay, Grandpa. First of all, that movie was shot in the 50s or 60s, so don't act like you stood in line to see its midnight screening on opening day. Secondly, I step into him with my most intimidating scowl. Can you even drive it? Instead of replying, he looks around.
Put on that helmet.
This? It's a round, giant monstrosity covered in the Italian flag. When I stick my head inside, it feels no less heavy than societal expectations. Why do I have to put it on? He casts a level look in my direction.
Because if we end up in an accident, I'd rather die than survive you.
My heart stops. Doesn't restart for whole seconds. That is...
What?
Just a little blunt? And macabre. And very weird to say.
I am blunt and very fucking weird.
An odd, pleasant heat spreads through my chest. Maybe you should try not to be? He frowns.
I'm going to ask again. Can you try to not be trouble? Just for a couple of hours.
As it turns out, under optimal circumstances, I am, in fact, able to restrain myself. Holding on tight to Connor's waist, breeze cooling my tacky skin, I can be quiet and focused. I have no clue whether Connor has the necessary license to drive the scooter, but he knows what he's doing. And after the first couple of minutes of winding roads, I'm reasonably sure that Rue and Eli won't have to read their vows on top of our closed caskets. We progress slowly, keeping an eye on the mostly unoccupied coastline, scanning it for a large, curly, slobbering mass whose color is much too similar to the rocky bits of the shore for my taste. The sky is increasingly dark and ashy, whether because of the weather or the volcano, I'm not sure. Still, it must have dissuaded most visitors from leaving the house. About 10 minutes into our search, we drive past Isola Bella. It's striking, even against the gunmetal sky. The waves around it seem to have turned a deeper blue-green, and the high tide fully submerges the sandbar. I stare, wondering what would happen if someone were to remain stuck on the island after the rise of the water levels.
There!
I scream.
Connor, do you see him?
He must, because he stops abruptly.
How the fuck did he get there?
Tiny is on the shore of Isola Bella. It must have been earlier, when the isthmus was visible. and now he can't come back.
It's a knee-jerk reaction, taking off the helmet and running toward the island. Connor yells at me to wait, but I simply can't.
Tiny?
I call.
Hey, you spit monster! I'm here, baby! I got you!
The moment Tiny realizes that I've come for him, he barks twice, then once more. His tail wags like a lasso, and he runs up and down the shore of the island, looking for a place to cross.
Bless his heart. He's never been a good swimmer.
It's okay, I yell. You're still the best boy!
Is he, though?
Connor asks from my side.
The best boy got himself stranded.
I said best, not smartest. And tides are hard to understand even for scientists. I start taking off my clothes.
What the hell are you doing?
What do you think? I slide my shoes off. I'm swimming to my beautiful dumb dog.
In a couple of hours, the tide...
He's probably terrified and thinks that we've forsaken him. Do you think I'd leave him alone for even 10 minutes? I drop my top on the sand. Connor's lips twitch, but he starts taking off his sandals.
Can I point out that you're not wearing a swimsuit?
I glance down at myself. Sure enough, that's a bralette. The white lace is going to do great when the time comes to disguise my nipples. There's no one around, and it's nothing that I wouldn't show you anyway. Our eyes lock, and I'm worried about Tiny, impatient, but I smile. So does he. There is a moment, when his t-shirt peels off his abs and chest, when I hook my thumbs under my shorts and pull them down, a moment that's so painfully familiar, it almost feels like a cliche. Two people who like each other, standing in front of each other, peeling off layers. Two lovers scrambling to get undressed because they need to touch, to feel, now. A helping hand undoing a tie, sliding a zipper open. It is a cliche, and it fills me with more yearning than I thought I was capable of. I stop, dizzy. Connor's movements slow to a crawl.
It's a mind fuck, isn't it?
He says slow. What is?
You. This. What could...
What could be? He doesn't say it, but I know he's thinking it. If only I weren't so young. If only he weren't messed up. If only it could work out. It can! I want to scream. It will! But he's down to his shorts and already saying,
I'm going first. Make sure you stay close.
Why?
So I can drown you, of course.
I laugh.
It should only be a few feet deep. But if there's a weird current, just tap me and...
I can swim, Connor.
I know. 20 freestyle, 20 backstroke, 10 breaststroke.
I stare, confused. Then realize what he's referring to is my morning routine. For the last couple of days. He counted every lap. I press my trembling lips together. Did you set an alarm to creep on me?
I just wake up. It's like my body knows where you are at any given moment.
He smiles, a little wistful. His finger starts on my collarbone, traces my shoulder, descends down the little bulge of my biceps. I shiver.
Stay close,
he repeats. And then he wades in. It's a quick swim, save for a brief stretch right in the central part of the sandbar. It barely qualifies. In no more than a couple of minutes, we're on the island, and Tiny, who's really trying my patience, barks several times, then disappears behind a dry stone wall.
Tiny, wait!
But he doesn't.
Well, shit.
The island is something out of a movie, made of large rocks stacked upon each other, winding vertically toward a historic house. Lush and resilient, the trees grow everywhere. On top of and between the boulders, across the uneven stone paths, down the cliff's slopes, inside hidden alcoves. My travel guide had a few pages about the history of the place, and I know that in the 19th century, a conservationist fell in love with it and decided to build a small villa in its center. She didn't just preserve the vegetation that was already on the island, but also planted non-native species. Maybe that's why it looks just a little out of place, and much less civilized than the rest of the Ionian coast. The spots we've visited so far, the restaurants and landmarks, and even Villa Fedra with its neatly terraced lawns and well-kept groves, are orderly and sophisticated. Isola Bella, on the other hand, is a colorful, tangled jungle, a nature reserve bursting with shrubs and succulents and exotic flowers that could never be found beyond the confines of the sandbar. The island is now owned by the Sicilian government, but even with constant upkeep, everything feels overgrown and a little too cramped. It's like the flora refuses to stop spreading just to give us mere mortals access to its wonders. Isola Bella is a pleasure garden, and it cannot be contained.
God, I miss this place,
Connor says, hushed despite the fact that we're alone. He had the excellent sense to carry my flip-flops and his Birkenstocks. The rocks on the soil are sharp. Without them, our feet would be torn to shreds. Is it possible that it's not open to visitors? I was under the impression that we'd be able to walk deep into the island, but I spot a door carved inside the rock and a ticketing office sign. Pink and purple bougainvillea grow all around its door. Unfortunately, we cannot reach it, because it's past a closed iron gate. Somehow, so is Tiny.
I think the whole area might be. Most people get here via the cable car,
Connor says, pointing behind us at the gondolas parked all the way up the hill.
Today they don't seem to be running.
Because of the volcano? Mount Etna's column of smoke and fire is clearly visible from where we stand. Occasionally, it even growls.
That, or because it's supposed to storm.
Shit. I eye the gate. It's shorter than me, and climbing it would be a piece of cake if it weren't for those sharp pikes at the top. Do you think we can... Connor's hands are already around my waist, lifting me over the iron bars. I briefly see myself impaled on one or more of the pikes, rivulets of blood mixing to little chunks of bowels as they trickle out of me. I prepare to scream, cry, perhaps throw up on Connor. Before I get a chance, though, he deposits me on the other side and joins me with a simple, sleek jump. I take a few deep breaths and watch him wipe his hands clean against his shorts, trying not to stare. This, being here alone, with him, the illicitness of trespassing private property, the fact that we're both close to naked, all of it together, it's a lot. Color me impressed by your athleticism, old man. His look is withering.
When my geriatric joints require surgery, I'll make sure to bill your insurance.
I'm still on Eli's, who is on Harkness's. I realize something. Which means that you pay for my birth control. Isn't that fascinating? He grunts, noncommittal, murmurs something about the superiority of universal healthcare. I adjust the twisted strap of my bralette and add, you're welcome to start taking advantage of your money's worth any day. It takes a lot longer than it should, but I can spot the exact moment my meaning sinks in. He is too bare to hide the way his every muscle winds tight.
Maya.
Yeah? He shakes his head roughly.
You cannot say that to me.
Really? I tilt my head, dimple up at him. Is there a law or something? I don't wait for an answer before turning around. Tiny! Tiny! Come here, baby! It's starting to drizzle. We follow beaten tracks, climb over a couple of increasingly slick rocks, and it soon becomes apparent that Tiny is having way too much fun being chased by us. I call him, but he never listens to me. Eli may be his boss, but I'm his peer, and any demand I might make of him is little more than a polite suggestion.
Tiny, will you please come?
He doesn't. We venture toward the center of the island, swatting away bugs, and the rain grows heavier. Connor walks ahead of me, constantly looking back to make sure I haven't slipped and cracked my skull on a jagged piece of rock. I roll my eyes every time, but when I trip over an exposed root, he catches me with a hand over my ribcage, and his eyebrow arches. When we emerge from a grove of palms, I realize that we must have crossed the entire island and are much closer to the water than I thought. Thick raindrops soak my hair and Tiny's fur. He's never been a huge fan of water, but he idles near an indentation in the rock wall, barking in its direction.
It's an entrance,
Connor says.
To a cave. An artificial cave. See how steps were carved in the stone?
Tiny, who usually rolls down the stairs because he's too lazy to walk, darts downward with the agility of a mountain goat, and we hurry after him. Despite the gloom of the day, the visibility inside the cave is surprisingly good, with light filtering in from an opening down below. Is this some kind of...
grotto,
Connor says once we reach the bottom. He points at the other end of the cave, where the stone arches.
Ships sail in that way, then dock over here.
And tourists climb up the steps to visit the island. I nod. You can see the coast from here.
That's Villa Fedra.
Tiny barks again, this time at an alcove in the wall. Connor and I exchange a glance, and he says, for what better be the last damn time,
stay behind me.
He pets Tiny with a mumbled,
bad boy,
that holds zero discipline and lots of affection, then frowns as he leans forward for a better look.
Maya.
Yeah? He shakes his head.
Have to take it back.
Hmm?
What I said about Tiny. He's actually a goddamn genius.
Tiny puffs up with pride. Why?
Because he wasn't running. He led us here on purpose.
Chapter 30. The other dog is a mutt too, but much smaller, and so terrified of us, its little sable-coated body never stops trembling. It takes me and Connor very little time to pry it out of the gap in the wall, but the entire time Tiny stares at us, an impatient supervisor clearly distrustful of his staff. He's a him, I think, I tell Connor. Aren't you handsome? That last part is a bald-faced lie. So obvious, Connor raises an amused eyebrow. Oh, shut up, I say, biting back a smile. So maybe he's not the platonic ideal of canine beauty. His underbite might interfere with mastication, and one of his eyes is larger than the other. He's at once skeletal and stocky, too wide for his length and comically tiny-headed. His floppy red ears, though, are a spectacle, and some of us value temperament over looks, I tell Connor after the dog stops hiding behind Tiny, approaches me to cautiously sniff my hand, and then licks it. Connor snorts, but when the dog lets him scratch the top of his head, he reluctantly concedes that
he might be growing on me.
Tiny, look at you making local friends.
Takes after you,
he mutters, and I need a moment to figure out that he's talking about not Hans. You think he just did it to make us jealous? I feel the weight of Connor's eyes on me, his confusion fizzling in the air. And it sinks in that he really doesn't get it. He truly believes that I would walk away and sleep with someone else. You have to know, I want to tell him. You have to know that I've been in love with you for 3 years longer than it was wise. But this is Connor's MO. He pushes me away because he fundamentally doesn't believe that I know what I want. In his head, I'm still a 20-year-old with shiny object syndrome, one who cannot be trusted to make her own decisions. Depressing, that's what it is.
Think he's still a puppy?
He asks. Maybe?
Wonder how Tiny found him.
My guidebook said that there are lots of stray animals here in Sicily. Maybe they met around the villa and led each other here? He nods, thoughtful.
We need to take him to a vet.
Lucrezia will know who. The dog wags his tail with excitement, of meeting new people, of being free, of warm hands petting him. But when thunder roars through the cave, he and Tiny both duck for cover under a protuberance jutting out of the rock wall, curling into each other. Connor sighs.
We should wait for the rain to be over before we go back. And we might need to carry the puppy.
Is your phone back at the Lambretta? He nods.
Yours?
I lost track of it a while ago. In my room, maybe?
Isn't your generation supposed to be attached to phones?
Yes, and yours is too. You weren't born during the Great Depression, Connor. You're a millennial. Can you stop acting like everyone you knew growing up died of measles? Then I notice his smile. I keep falling for this shit. Fuck off, I mumble, turning to inspect the cave. It's stunning. A large chamber of all-encompassing blue. The walls are rugged and not excessively high, but the rounded ceiling gives the place a cathedral-like appearance. At the mouth of the grotto, rain ripples the surface of the sea. Ribbon-like streams of light and rainwater filter through the cracks in the rock, a pleasant, soothing rhythm, interrupted only by the occasional birdsong as the island's inhabitants take shelter. But where we are, the deep belly of the cave, is undisturbed, cocoon-like, intimate. The stone gently slopes into the sea, and I scoot down to let my feet soak. The fish quickly swim away, confused by the intrusion, and I cannot help laughing. We may be stuck here, but I'm not mad about it, I say. When Connor gives me a quizzical look, I step into the water. It starts shallow, but deepens more dramatically than I expected. Soon, my feet cannot touch. I dip my head, then push back my flattened curls and wash off the dirt and sweat.